Wherever we go, wherever we stay, we take our problem with us. It's always with us. Whatever we do, the problem is there. We might not see it, or we might see it. Normally the changing of a place, the changing of a posture, the changing of the environment, or of the work we are doing, normally hides the fact. But sooner or later, we will be faced with the same problem, with the same old problem. And then our reaction is to change our posture, to change the location, or to change the style of practice we are doing. And then after a while, we will face the same problem and we do it again. We don't want to see that the problem resides within us. We don't want to see the dirty hair in our soup, or the fly in the soup. We just see the soup, and we don't. The people in the world just see the soup, they don't see the fly, or they don't see the dirty, greasy, ugly looking hair that is on the bottom of the plate or is in the middle somewhere. So they just eat the soup, or they eat the dish, and they eat that hair with them, or they eat the fly with them. And the fly is poisonous. So they eat the dishes, and after a while they need to go to the doctor because their stomach is upset, or they have food poisoning or whatsoever. They never make it to understand that actually the poisoning or the problem is within the food. And I'm not talking about the food that we eat, I'm talking about the food of the senses. So whatever we do, just like I explained yesterday, whatever we do, whatever avijja is presenting us, what kind of sense contact it might be it the sense contact of the eye, be it the sense contact of the nose, of the tongue, of the ears, of touching or thinking, they always come with this ugly, dirty, stinking little hair within them. Once we start practicing, we can see it, or we learn to see it, that there is no sense contact that is satisfactory in itself. It always comes with dukkha. There is always, at each sense contact, there is dukkha. If you think, or if you get fooled, that there is a sense contact that has no dukkha, we just don't see it. It has to be because it comes from avijja. Avijja is always putting this little poison within our food, within our sense food. And we have to get smart to see it as early as possible, not to eat it, not to get taken away by the taste of the food, or by the taste of the senses, or by the excitement of the senses, by this or that, because otherwise we get that poison inside ourselves. And to get rid of the poison is more difficult than not to eat it at all. So wherever we go, whatever kind of sense dish we get, it will be with this ugly, disgusting looking hair inside it. That should, if we are aware of that, that should make us repel from the excitement in the senses. Just see the senses as they are. Do not feel attached, because the moment you feel attached, you like it or you don't like it, then this poison comes into your heart. And it makes the heart restless, or it makes the heart displeasant, or it makes the heart feeling pain, or it makes the heart suffering, depending on our attachment, depending on the strength of the attachment. So, the moment we start practicing, we should be aware of it. We should be aware of this dukkha that is coming with any kind of the senses, of the six senses that I'm talking about. The dukkha that comes also with the five khandhas, that is within the five khandhas. But as I explained yesterday, the hair, this ugly looking, disgusting hair that is in our soup has nothing to do with the soup. Once we take it out, the soup will still taste delicious without the poison coming into our heart. So once we take a vicha out, once we take out the kilesas, the fangs of a vicha, there will be no more displeasure. There will be no more dissatisfaction. There will be no more restlessness. And whatever we do, there will be just satisfaction. There will be just paramang sukham, the supreme happiness, and happiness that cannot be gained in this world. The first kind of happiness that we can receive when we start our practice is the happiness that arises within upachara samadhi. It's a happiness that we can't find in the sense excitements in the world. It's a happiness that we can only find once we concentrate our mind. Once we get our mind still, once we get our mind concentrated on one object, then either great happiness, joy is arising, or just happiness is arising, or just a peacefulness of mind is arising, or completely calm. There are different kinds of happiness. Once one is calm, once one experiences the happiness of calm, then one feels, when one comes out, that all the sense contacts are just disturbing one's peacefulness. One feels out, the longer one has stayed in the upachara samadhi, in the deep state of calm, or even in the apana, it's even more obvious. When one comes out of this apana samadhi, one has the feeling one comes back in a world war of the senses. This sense is trickling, this sense is trickling, and this sense is trickling, and this and this and this. Before, one has been in absolutely calm, and then coming back into the world of the senses, one just feels completely irritated. Especially if you make the mistake to get out too fast. Out of apana samadhi or upachara samadhi, we have the feeling of complete restlessness once we come out. That just tells us that we have come out too fast. When we come out of upachara samadhi or when we come out of apana samadhi, we should really make it very slow, close, opening our eyes very slow, having the intention to open our eyes, you know, and just slowly coming back into the world so that our heart is not shocked. Not shocked by the impact of the senses anymore. So we just slowly remember where we are, what we are doing before we open our eyes. Otherwise we can open our eyes very fast and then we just don't remember where we are. So this is the impact of the senses. When one can compare it then, once one has this experience, one can compare it. If this is all the time, if the world is like this world war of senses, what's the use of it? It brings us complete restlessness. Compared to our great peacefulness, or compared to our great calm that we experienced just a moment ago. And of course the decision is just going back into samadhi as fast as possible. So if you just can remember, if you just look out, if you just are mindful of all of this hair or of the fly that is in every kind of sense dish that we get, and pick it out, it is not somebody else put us a fly into the soup, or somebody else in our drop that ugly hair in our soup. It is that the soup is already served with this thing. And the only one who is guilty of it is us. Is the kilesas or is avijja that is ruling us? That is the only one who is guilty of this. There's nobody else. There's no circumstances, no whatsoever, that puts this irritation or dissatisfaction or restlessness or painful feelings or suffering in our dish of the senses. Nobody. And we have to train our mindfulness to see it. We really have to train our mindfulness to see that all the senses are dissatisfactory in itself. That there is no lasting satisfactory coming from our senses. As I said, people in the world don't see it, so that's why they eat always this poison, that's why they need always the medical care. And that's what they are dying from. If they are eating too much of it, that's what they are going to die from. And because of their attachment, they are reborn again. And they will be reborn again. And they will never understand that the dissatisfaction is just built in any kind of sense contact. Once, only then, when we remove avijja from our heart, then there is no more dissatisfaction. Then the senses are just the senses, the body is just the body, feeling is just feeling. Be it pleasant feeling or unpleasant feeling, is just a feeling. Memory is just a memory, thought is just a thought, and consciousness is just consciousness. None of them contain any more this ugly, dirty, stinking hair. They are cleaned off. They are cleaned off of avijja. And that is what is called paramang sukham, the supreme happiness when there is nobody putting any more this poison in our food. And that, once we have done that, once we have removed this hair, then whatever sense dish we eat, there will be no dissatisfaction. There will be no irritation. Also, the world still goes on just in the same way as it has been before. But the persons, you know, who we projected our hate on, that hate just does not exist anymore. Because we see the things as they are, and the sense contact is without any irritation, is without any dukkha. So we see the world is still just the same before and after. Before, that means when we have avijja in our heart, we see always the fault in others. We always see the fault in this situation, in that situation, in this sound, in that sound, in this eye contact, in that eye contact, in this kind of food, or in that kind of food, in this sense contact, or in that sense contact. We don't see that it comes from inside. That it's already that every kind of sense contact is already poison with avijja, is already poison with the thanks of avijja, with the kilesas. You can call it when you want. If you want to call it, you can call it sugar-coated poison. All what we can see is the sugar. And the poison, we cannot see. We just eat it with the sugar. And we constantly project. We constantly project our hate, our irritation, our painful feelings onto the environment. Onto the sitting posture, onto this, onto that, onto this kind of noise, onto that person who did something that irritated us. That's why our meditation does not go right. Because this person did this, or that person did that, or the food wasn't good, or this wasn't good, or that wasn't good. If you remember, or if you can remember, that whatever kind of sense contact comes in contact with our citta, it is already poisoned. Just remove that poison and you will feel satisfied. And you will not project any more the anger on the outside world, but find it within. Once you see how the server or the waiter, avijja, puts in this poison in our food, then you will get on his footsteps or on his tracks. And then you just follow him up until you see it with your own inner eyes. How he does it. And you just knock him on the head, or you just knock on his fingers, and that is the end of it. And then whatever sense contact comes in, it's just pure. Just purified of the poison that avijja puts into it. If you just could remember that with whatever we do, with whatever we feel, with whatever memory we have, with whatever thought we have, with whatever feeling can, and whatever position of the body it is, then we would be, in whatever sense contact there is, then we would be already at peace. But we do not like this, or we like this, we want this, we don't like that. And that is the poison. Or we want more of it, that is the poison. We want to get it again, that is the poison. That is the poison of tanha, the second noble truth, the origin for our dukkha. Wanting, 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 liking, disliking, not wanting, wanting to be, wanting to come into existence, don't want to be, you will just die. This is the source of our dukkha. And the path that is leading out to the dukkha is the path of sila, samadhi and panna. For it to see it, you know, we first have to have a goal. It's just like we are looking, we are crossing the country and looking for land that could satisfy all our needs. And sometimes, you know, we come to a land where we see that is the land. That is the land that could satisfy all our needs. But it has been dried up for ages, maybe for eons. So there's no water. If there would be water, we knew that land would be extremely fertile. So we go and look if there's water, some water close by. And we walk, you know, we walk for half a day and then we see a tripling of water. And then how to get the water to this land? We would know that even that tripling of water wouldn't make that land fertile. So we first have to build a tank, a water tank. Once we are going to fill it up with water, then this water of the water tank, no matter how big it is, has to be quite big. Once it is thrown on the land, it makes that land fertile, and then just this tripling river would be enough to sustain the fertility of the land. So we notice, though, first we build the tank of water. That means in our practice we build our five silas. We build generosity, gratitude and respect to make a tank for the water to keep the water in. Then we go, having a little bucket, we go to the stream that is half a day's of walk. We fill it up there, we go back, but on the back, you know, we lose a quarter of it, and then we are thirsty because the sun is hot, and we lose another quarter of it, and all what is left that you bring to the tank is half of the bucket. So after a while of doing this, you get a little bit smart and think, ah, maybe we build, or maybe we lead the river closer to the land, or closer to our water tank. That is the work of Panya, that is the work of wisdom. To remove the obstacles in the river, to make it flow more constant, or to give more water. Going down the stream and seeing where there are big obstacles, where the river is hindered to go, or where the stream is hindered to flow through. So remove these obstacles with our wisdom, so that the stream can flow easily and give more water. And then we extend it slowly, we extend it so until it comes to the water tank. And then once the water tank is filled up, we don't feel happy. We just have to give it a big blow and knock it out so that the water flushes down the land and it instantly becomes fertile. That is the work of Sila, Samadhi and Panya. Sila is the water tank. Samadhi is the concentration or doing the work, going up and down, finding the bucket. And Panya is helping out to make it, to remove the obstacles. Because even if we just would walk, if Samadhi would be strong enough and we would walk every day and every day and every day, just the heat of the day would vanish the water that is in the water tank that we gather daily. So there is no use. If you don't use our Panya, if you don't use our wisdom to investigate, now what is preventing this river to flow freely, and how can we extend it over all these obstacles that are on the path to our water tank? That is the path of wisdom that makes that water flow into the water tank. And once the water tank is filled, then we can destroy it. And this will lead to a fertilized land where we don't need anything anymore. Never ever. In other words, Nibbana. It's just the same. It's just the same simile. As a simile of the Lord Buddha, then it says, you first have to see Nibbana. Once you see Nibbana, or once you know that there is Nibbana, if you want to cross over the river, you just build a raft, you gather some bamboo, you build the raft, you cross the river, and once you cross the river, you have to throw away that raft and enter land of Nibbana. In that simile, the raft is the work of Samadhi and Panya. You have to throw it away. You are not so grateful. You can be grateful to the raft that it brought you across the river. That doesn't mean that you have to carry it along with you. Because carrying along with you makes you not be able to enter the land of Nibbana. So, what does it mean in our practice? We have to find the right thing. We have to find the middle way of practice, the middle of way of practice of building our raft strong enough, that means strong sila, strong enough to carry us across. And samadhi, the mindfulness and wisdom, will lead us through the dangerous river. Going past all these obstacles that are in the river. If we hit our raft on a sharp stone, that will throw us back to the other side. And we have to build a raft again, and then we have to start crossing the river. But some people, you know, are building, they're building an ocean liner to cross that river. I mean, this is necessary for crossing the river, and that is necessary for crossing the river, and I do need to have a snack bar, I do need to have a billiard room, and I do need to have a tennis court on my, and so on. A kitchen, and so on. That means, you know, we do excessive practice that is not necessarily. Excessive practice in rites and rituals that are not really necessary for crossing the river. Just have a, just gather the bamboo and make a firm raft and cross the river. I mean, do the things that are necessary. Everything that is excessive in terms of rites and rituals, this I heard that helps to for samadhi, that I heard that hurts, that helps for samadhi, that I heard, or this you need to, or you have to bow in this direction, or you have to bow in that direction, you have to do this and this and this and this and this. That is that means you're not just building an ocean liner. It will hit the first rock, you know, and will crash just the same as our simple raft. Other people think, you know, it's not necessary, you know, just throw enough bombers into the river, you know, and you just cross over it. And the people without the seal, that are the people without any seal. So there is the necessity for having good seal. There is the necessity for having enough samadhi. And there is the necessity to develop panya. And panya has to be extremely sharp. In the beginning of our crossing of the river, there are not so many hindrances, or the hindrances are big and they are easily to look at. But the closer we are coming to the other hand, our mindfulness has to be extremely sharp, because there are lots of sharp stones that we have to surround, that we just have to get out of the way. Our concentration is not sharp enough to detect it, and if our wisdom is not sharp enough to steer around it, then we are lost and we are going back. And some people even think, oh, no, why wasting the time in building a raft, you know, just swim across the river. And they are the ones, you know, who have no seen and who have no samadhi, who just want to go the way of panya, just go the way of wisdom. All what they do is, you know, they don't have any protection, and they will cut up their body on the sharp stones that are in the river, and they will die. So these three columns of sila, samadhi, and panya are the way that clears the path to the land of Nirvana, are the way to remove that thorn, that poisonous thorn that sits in our heart or sits in our flesh. And instead of removing that poisonous thorn, we always cut out that flesh that has gotten rotten. We never touch the thorn. And now, with wisdom, we will investigate the right kind of practice, just to do it right. Enough effort, enough determination, right concentration, right way of living, right amount of food. This is the middle way of practice. Not to go into one extreme, to build the raft too strong, to strangle oneself with a lot of practice. This I need to do, that I need to do, this I need to do, and that I need to do. And the whole day passes without actually us doing any kind of work, any kind of samadhi or any kind of wisdom. We just strangle ourselves with this I have to do and that I have to do. Without this I have to do and that I have to do, it's just like, you know, just throwing the bamboo into the river. We have no foothold, we have no raft to cross it. I mean, there's a middle way just enough that our raft is strong enough, and then use samadhi and panya to steer through the river. To remove the thought, to see in every sense, now coming back, to see within every sense contact that it is dissatisfactory in itself. And it is dissatisfactory in itself because of the ruling power of avijja. That puts always this poison in every kind of sense contact, that puts the poison in the five khandhas. And with the help of anicca, anatta, dukkha, with the help of things are impermanent, whatever we perceive, whatever we encounter is impermanent. It is arising and it is ceasing. It is arising, staying on for a while and ceasing. But the way of seeing these things are not myself. These things do not belong to me. These things are just like clouds passing by. I don't grab a dark cloud or a white cloud and say, this is my cloud. Everything that comes into the contact with the senses, no, this is not me, that is not mine, that doesn't belong to me. That is the principle of anatta. And seeing that stain, seeing that poison, in every kind of sense contact, that is seeing dukkha, dissatisfaction, restlessness, dis-ease, painful feeling, suffering. So if you steer through the river and come to the shore of Nibbana, and we don't stick there and don't put the raft on our back, that just burdens us. Everybody who crosses a river and now crosses the land just would leave the raft behind. Once we leave the raft behind, then we can enter the land of Nibbana. So, and with this, I end the talk.